We are here to talk about Letters Lost, Then Found, a conversation between two brothers that is during the time span of 1942 to 1945. And I'm talking to Amy L. Johnson. These are your relatives. Take me into the basement of your grandfather's house. How you found these letters?
Well, it was in 2002. I inherited the somber task of emptying my grandparents' home. And where do you start when you have to empty someone's home that deserves the utmost care and respect? And I thought, well, I'll start in the basement and work myself to daylight. And so I was starting with the filing cabinets. And my grandfather had a long corridor of filing cabinets. And I'll never forget, it was day three, and I would start in the back of the filing cabinet and then work my way forward. And when I reached in the back of the filing cabinet, there was a very thick file folder of all the letters from Freddie, his younger brother, and the typed replies from my grandfather, William. And growing up, you know, I knew of Freddie, but my grandfather never talked about him. And there was a big dragon that hung in my grandfather's den. And it wasn't a dragon at all. It was a caricature of an airplane. And I knew it had something to do with Freddie. And so when I found these letters, there was that dragon again. And I saw such a moving narrative, I just knew I would have to do something with it.
So when you found these letters, did he have them already in order?
Yes, they were mostly in order.
Wow, organized.
And they were starting to, they were quite brittle because they were so old. So the first thing I did was Xerox them all and put them in a three-ring binder and share them with friends and family. And then really put it away until I went back to school. I was taking a publication design class, and then this project came back to life, and I was able to add photographs, research the China-Burma-India Theater, and put it into a publication.
And the publication, the book, is really a treat to look at. Your background, you're actually a graphic designer, not an author.
Yes,
right.
Correct.
And you teach at Kendall?
I teach at Kendall College of Art and Design, Adobe Creative Suite, photography, digital darkroom, mostly for freshmen and sophomore.
So the book is beautifully put together. Well done.
Thank you.
And what makes it interesting is you didn't transcribe these letters. You actually scanned them, correct?
Yes, that was a challenge because the letterhead from every airbase was a different size. So to find a scale so all the handwriting would look consistent throughout. And I thought that level of literacy, beautiful handwriting, punctuation and grammar written with a fountain pen by a 19-year-old was quite impressive rather than going through and retyping all the letters because that adds a lot more to the story, I think.
And I think that was a wonderful choice because when you're looking at this, it's a visual treat. You do get to see the letterhead. So I was looking at those pages to look at the details, and that in itself gives you a feeling of authenticity, that you're really there and next to you digging through that basement and coming across these letters. But you also put photographs, newspaper clippings, ticker tape. Talk about that.
Oh, now the ticker tape that runs along the bottom of almost every page explains why we were in the China-Burma-India Theater. It's probably maybe the fourth thing you look at as you go through the book, and it's almost like a radio playing in the background of what is actually going on in the war as you're eavesdropping on this conversation between William and Freddie. And the ticker tape is just a reminder that the war is constantly there. And if you'd like to read it in its entirety, it's in the back of the book. So you're not just going through reading little snippets of ticker tape.
So you can go through it more than once, actually. So give us a little portrait here of William or Willie and Fred.
Freddie was 19 years old when he left Saginaw, Michigan, to go off to war. He spent a lot of time at different air bases getting pilot training before he eventually ventured off to the China-Burma-India Theater. My grandfather, William, he was age 30, and he couldn't go to war because their father was deceased and another brother was in the European theater. And there was kind of an unwritten rule. you know, back then that the eldest son had to stay on the home front. He worked for the Saginaw News, handled all the accounting for Freddie and his brother and his mother, and, you know, really was the matriarch. A hard worker, filed everything, and really was more of a father figure to Freddie. And just reading the letters, what impressed me most about the letters, my grandfather was such a stern, acerbic man, and to see the level of care and love that he had for his brother was so incredibly moving for me. And then how Freddie respected and looked up to him. So not only is it about the lost art of letter writing, it's about brotherly love. And that is a story within a story as well.
The letters start out, if I can use the word mundane, I mean, they talk about a lot of daily routine, you know, could you take care of my banking thing and where my paycheck will go, and, you know, and one brother sends the other brother newspapers and that kind of thing. And yet there's something about it that draws you in. And the interesting thing is you get to this point where, you know, you're reading about this and then all of a sudden there's this newspaper clipping.
The letters do seem mundane, you know, waiting for that good deck of playing cards or the home newspaper or send me a photo of my girl. But that's what the warriors were like, really. And as the letters go back and forth, you almost don't want them to end. But then Freddie was on his way home and the people on the home front didn't know he was coming home. And he was the only one from his squadron. It was going to be a surprise. And then the plane went down in the Himalayas, and which they call the Aluminum Highway, because so many planes went down in that area. So Freddie never received William's last letter. My grandfather, William, continued to, you know, research the area and the crash site and all of that. And maybe that's why he never talked about Freddie, because it was such heartbreak for him. I'm hoping there was a sole survivor of the crash, and I'm hoping that will be my next book.
Ah, there's a next one in the works.
I hope so.
Did your family, you said your grandfather didn't talk about Freddie very much. Did anybody else in the family? Growing up, what was your knowledge of Fred? Was it just a random photograph somewhere? Or?
Well, it was that dragon in the den I was so fascinated with. And I didn't learn until I was probably a teenager that it was a caricature of an airplane. It's a very large canvas, and it's signed by everyone in Freddie's squadron. And my grandfather got that after the fact. Freddie's nickname was Buzz Boy Pete because he was always buzzing around and he liked to drive fast and he'd want to be a mechanic and very mechanically inclined. Handsome is what my grandmother's sisters would tell me, and funny and kind. But reading these letters, that comes through as well. I feel like I kind of know Freddie now.
Yeah, I would think so. Now, did I miss it? Or, you know, at the beginning, he keeps bugging his big brother for that picture. Send me that picture of the girl he didn't get to kiss.
Of Dot Friars.
What happened to her?
I've researched that and researched that. Dot isn't a very common name. I'm assuming it's short for Dorothy. I've gone through yearbooks of Saginaw, both from, you know, the Catholic schools and the public schools. And I'm determined to locate Dot Friars or a family. But I did find a photo in my grandfather's belongings, and I did put it in my book. I'm guessing it might be Dot Friars because he said, send me the photo from Bosch's, the name of the portrait studio, and it was in a Bosch frame. And I'm just wondering if my grandfather had a print made. If he had one print made, he'd make 5 prints, because same with copies. If one copy's good, 10 is better.
Kind of funny how the brothers talk about her. Well, she's cute. Well, I wouldn't date her if she wasn't cute.
Exactly.
It's kind of adorable. Any idea if there's any correspondence between Fred and this girl?
You know, I have no idea. That's why when I started this book, I wondered what other correspondence existed.
Yeah.
And all the correspondence Freddie had written to his mother was buried with his mother. that's why I thought, well, maybe the Dot Friars angle, the girlfriend, maybe I could, you know, somehow pursue that. But I've just come up with dead ends. And she had to be from Saginaw, but was she older? Was she a lot younger? But I researched it both 4 years ahead and 4 years behind, and nothing so far.
Oh, I'm going to cross my fingers. That would be a great part, too. Talk about the China, Burma, or CBI theater, the Forgotten War campaign, because that's a part of what Fred is involved in, right?
Exactly. I don't think he got to choose where he wanted to go. I think he wanted to go to the European theater like his other brother, Phil, that they called Angel because he never got caught, you know, doing anything. And the China, Burma, India theater was an important part of the war because we were over there to help the Chinese, you know, defend against the Japanese and open up the supply routes, the Burma Road and the Lido Road. So he would fly both combat missions and supply route missions, getting supplies to the Chinese so they could open those roads up. And it was an important part of the war. By helping the Chinese, we were keeping the Japanese kind of preoccupied on that side of the world. But it truly was a global war.
And also there's some other interesting historic tidbits, some that you've written about on your blog, on your website, gas rationing and stickers. It was interesting to look at that.
Oh, I had no idea what gas rationing was, and so I researched that a little bit. And, you know, men versus women, you know, doctor, you know, versus the plumber, depending on what kind of sticker you would get for your car, of how much gas you could get. And it wasn't they were rationing gas. They were really rationing rubber. They didn't want you to wear down your tires because rubber was needed for the war effort. And I didn't really seek out to become a World War II history buff or something, but as I unearthed these letters, I realized there's so much I don't know about that time period. And, you know, the Victory Gardens and propaganda posters and all of those. So hopefully I'll have many blogs to write as I move forward with this project.
Now, the book hasn't been out very long, but have you gotten any responses, perhaps some World War II veterans or their families?
I actually was reading my book to a group at the Grand Rapids Veteran Home, and there were two World War II vets there. From the various book shows I've done, everyone has a story to tell about a relative, you know, father, uncle, cousin, and the letters that they have or where they were stationed. And that's been quite fascinating. And I can see the spark go off in their eyes thinking, you know, that they want to do something with their letters. And then some regret throwing those letters away. And it's been very interesting meeting people and hearing their story. And some actually served in the China, Burma, India theater. And one gentleman was telling me that his father was embarrassed to talk about it because he was a typist in the war and he could type faster than anyone, and that's why he never talked about the war. So it's just not a generational thing. I thought it was a generational thing and they just didn't talk about the war. A lot of them don't, but some of them do. It slowly kind of comes out. And the book is relatable because it's not necessarily, it is my family story, but it's everyone's family story with the letters, you know, coming home. And because there wasn't any Facebook or Snapchat or Twitter or Instagram,
right.
They were waiting for that letter and that was their form of communication.
Actually, when you mention all the social media and today's type of communication that we use, email and texting, and it seems to be coming more and more of a type of electronic shorthand. When I read these letters and the beautiful handwriting that so many children today probably, I mean, there's even a debate whether we teach handwriting anymore. Did you think about that if it had happened today, you might not have had that box of letters?
I've actually had young people mention that they can't read the letters. You know, the age group that I teach can't read the letter. It's too difficult to read.
Cursive writing?
Right. And that came as a big surprise to me because I never, when you think about all the details, putting together a book that's also a graphic design piece, I never thought to consider that some people won't be able, we're that far removed from beautiful cursive writing.
Ouch.
Oh, I agree. But I believe everything old will be new again, and everything kind of operates in a circle a little bit. So hopefully it will come back. And I was even more impressed that these letters were written with a fountain pen, because that didn't dawn on me until someone, a friend of mine and mentor, pointed it out to me.
Yeah, you can tell because the thickness of the lines.
Because the ballpoint pen didn't come out until 1952. So, yeah, for a 19-year-old to keep track of a fountain pen and write with the just the punctuation and grammar alone compared to
that too made my
today.
English major heart ping a little bit, and I thought, how many 19-year-olds today could write as well as Freddie did? Not just the cursive, the beautiful cursive handwriting, but the way he expresses himself.
Some people that I've shared the book with, you know, older generation, they feel that 9th through 12th grade is equal to today 9th through 12th grade and 4 years of college.
Agreed.
So that was interesting, too. So interesting to hear all these little tidbits and that everyone's so willing to share.
Yeah, yeah. And I bet there'll be a lot more. So, Amy, if you can read something to us from the book.
I have two letters I'd like you to read.
Okay.
The first one is from Freddie to Willie, my grandfather. Willie, tell Dot Friars I'm sorry I didn't kiss her goodbye like she wanted me to, but I'll take care of it when I come home. I just got back from a lecture by her chaplain, a real guy boy. I went to confession, too, something you ought to try. Had a little ordeal the other day that left my heart in my mouth for about 10 minutes. We were out on a bombing and strafing mission behind the lines, and just as we get over the target area, my engine conked. I no sooner got it running again, and it conked the second time. Boy, you never saw anybody work so fast in all your life. By that time, I figured it's a good idea to head for greener pastures. By far, to date anyway, I've had better luck on my missions than I've had at cards. Had my ups and downs, of course, and had my ass shot off several times. But Kitten always gets me home. Kitten is my plane, and she purrs just like one. It rains almost every night, and the humidity is so high that nothing will dry unless it's put out in the sun. We have to air out our wools about every other day so they won't mildew. We live in bashes made out of bamboo with thatched roofs, and they're none too weatherproof. I woke up at 5 a.m. today with water dripping in my face and my right shoe half full of water. Our shower is an open-air job, about 5 foot square, covered with bamboo. My steel helmet serves as a wash basin. Oh, yes, all the comforts of and facilities of home. Well, boss, have some work to do, so best I close for now. Give my best to Florence and the kids, and take it easy. As ever, Fred. And this letter is from Willie to Freddie. Hey, Buzz Boy, I'm sending a darn good magnifying glass as requested. I hope it is what you want, but if not, advise and I'll look for another. I'll look around for a gun of the type you mentioned, but don't hold your breath. They're scarcer than hen's teeth, and the few that I've seen in the months gone by had price tags on them higher than the moon. Nevertheless, I'll look around, and if in the meantime you find something along the line that you want, be sure to let me know immediately. Remember, the W in my name stands for wholesale. And that brings me to Christmas presents. Frankly, Florence and I are stuck for an idea as to what to get you besides cigarettes. Under separate cover, I'm sending you a pair of super-duper pigskin gloves, size 8. They are Daniel Hayes Super Seam, the best you can buy. I was darn lucky to find them. I don't know whether to call them a late birthday gift or a Christmas gift, so I'll let you decide. Keep an eye open for them. What's this? You're still not flying a Thunderbolt or a Mustang? I'm writing my congressman right now and asking him what the hell's the idea. It's getting quite late, so we'll sign off till later. Take care of yourself and write soon. As ever, Willie.
Well, thanks so much for coming in today, Amy, and reading.
Thank you for having me.
Reading a little bit from these wonderful letters. Kind of makes you want to go home and dig through the attic in the basement, see what you can find.
Exactly. There's treasures everywhere.